What is a family? Is it just a genetic chain, parents and offspring, people like me? Or is it a social construct, an economic unit, optimal for child rearing and divisions of labor? Or is it something else entirely, a store of shared memories, say, an ambit of love, a reach across the void? I could list various possibilities, but I'd never arrived at a definite answer, aware early on that, given my circumstances, such an effort was bound to fail. Instead, I drew a series of circles around myself, with borders that shifted as time passed and faces changed, but that nevertheless offered the illusion of control. An inner circle where love was constant and claims unquestioned, then a second circle, a realm of negotiated love, commitments freely chosen. And then a circle of colleagues, acquaintances, the cheerful gray-haired lady who rang up my groceries back in Chicago, until the circle finally widened to embrace a nation or a race or a particular moral course, and the commitments were no longer tied to a face or a name, but were actually commitments I'd made to myself. In Africa, this astronomy of mine almost immediately collapsed, for family seemed to be everywhere, in stores, at the post office, on streets and in parks, all of them fussing and fretting over Obama's long-lost son. If I mentioned in passing that I needed a notebook or shaving cream, I could count on one of my aunts to insist that she take me to some far-off corner of Nairobi to find the best bargains, no matter how long the trip took or how much it might inconvenience her. Ah, Betty, what's more important than helping my brother's son? If a cousin discovered, much to his distress, that Alma had left me to fend for myself, he might walk the 2 miles to Alma's apartment on the off chance that I was there and needed company. Ah, Betty, why didn't you call on me? Come, I will take you to meet some of my friends. And in the evenings, well, Alma and I simply surrendered ourselves to the endless invitations that came our way, from uncles, nephews, second cousins, or cousins once removed, all of whom demanded, at the risk of insult, that we sit down for a meal, no matter what time it happened to be or how many meals we had already eaten. Ah, Betty, we may not have much in Kenya, but so long as you are here, you will always have something to eat. At first, I reacted to all this attention like a child to its mother's bosom, full of simple, unquestioning gratitude. It conformed to my idea of Africa and Africans, an obvious contrast to the growing isolation of American life, a contrast I understood not in racial but in cultural terms, a measure of what we sacrificed for technology and mobility, but that here, as in the kampongs outside Jakarta, or in the country villages of Ireland or Greece, remained essentially intact. The insistent pleasure of other people's company, the joy of human warmth. As the days wore on, though, my joy became tempered with tension and doubt. Some of it had to do with what Alma had talked about that night in the car, an acute awareness of my relative good fortune, and the troublesome questions such good fortune implied. Not that our relatives were suffering exactly. Both Jane and Zaituni had steady jobs. Kazia made do selling cloth in the markets. If cash got too short, the children could be sent up country for a time. That's where another brother, Abo, was staying, I was told, with an uncle in Kendu Bay, where there were always chores to perform, food on the table, and a roof over one's head.